Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're getting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. It has been a short February, even though it was an extra day. We did the Cup of Super Bowl and the Crab Cake Row promotion with our charities and communities. And then I sort of like took a little time off to sort of, as we say in Dundalk, marinate on exactly what's happened with Oriole baseball in recent weeks. This is the week and the time, and it's my dad's birthday as we record this today on March the 5th. Would have been his 105th birthday. I'm re-releasing my 2006 book on my father's love of baseball and my love of baseball and really how it built the company. And I've been chasing down people this week. Just I took a list back at Super Bowl week. It took a couple weeks down and make things easy. And I'm like, who are people I want to talk to about the history of Oriole baseball, the future of Oriole baseball, and people who are vested in this? And so amongst many people, John Rand joined us this week. Rick Vaughn has joined us this week. I am pleased and kind of apologetic that I'm not buying him a crab cake at Pappas this time. But it is always a pleasure to have John Eisenberg, one of my mentors and friends, and the and also colleague of the great Jim Henneman, who's having the press box named after him in late April. I might be in that press box if they expedite this sale. Who knows? John Eisenberg has written books on the Orioles and on horse racing and on Iron Man and most recently on black quarterbacks and the lack of black quarterbacks in the history of the National Football League. He's always pimping a book. He's writing a book that's so secretive, he won't even tell me what it's. I hope it's not about me and my work in the FBI in the French Foreign Legion. John, how are you? What's going on? Happy spring training to you, whatever you're celebrating at this point. I know you and Wick and your whole family, you're like real Oriole fans, even though you're Texas blood. You're like really digging this whole thing. And you and I haven't spoken a word about David Rubenstein at all, but I think that's about to begin right now.
Yeah. It's pretty phenomenal. And, very definitely. I mean, I'm retired from the daily sports writing here, but I'm still doing. I live here, and you know, I had a season ticket package at one point 5 or 10 years ago. My whole family, they're fans. Listen, I'll tell you something, Nestor. My daughter, son-in-law, and two grandchildren are in Sarasota today. So
celebrating my father's birthday with some Oriole baseball, yeah. A little magic. I like it.
They are fans. So
well, so what? You know, I don't want to get too what does all this mean, John? You know, like if you're columnizing about all of this, what's your, cause I'm trying to put it in perspective for me. You know, I re-released the Peter Principles last month. Cause I feel like it's over. I wrote it. I want to get it out there and let people know where we came from. Let David Rubenstein know where we came from. I had a guy from the Banner call me, the day after the sale. Back in January, I'm sitting at the Apple store. My ish isn't working. He's like, hey, can you talk to me? And I got him on the phone. I said, look, I don't mean, and he was a former Sun guy. And I didn't know how old he was. And I got about 5 minutes in this. I said, dude, how old are you? He said, 38. And I'm like, oh, like you don't have any perspective on the day Angela, you were 8 years old the day Angela bought the team. So like, you know, so he's asking me, I said, are you looking for a quote? Or are you looking for what really happened? Like, if you're looking for what really happened, I wrote a book. You go check it out. But then I wrote the book of my father and our love of baseball, and I'm releasing that. And I'm wondering what the next thing is, because I'm 55 and I've lived through these eras. Stephen L. Miles always told me the day I did the walkout in 06, he was there in case I got arrested. He said to me, you're going to outlive him. Don't worry, you'll outlive him. I got perspective on this. And I'm thinking to myself, there have been times where I wondered whether this was ever going to happen or not. But the day after this happened, I started to think about, because I had never thought about him not owning the team. It felt like a Castro Cuba or like thinking about Putin not being in Russia anymore at this point. You're like, that's never going to happen. But it always happens. It's just patience.
Right. Well, the day after it happened, you know, I mean, I felt all it was. I felt it was coming. I felt the sale of the team was coming. I thought for financial reasons, it was a few years away. I was surprised at the timing. I was glad to see that they figured out a way to do it, sort of like what Steve Bisciotti did with Art Modell, you know, and stair-step the thing over a period of years back in the early 2000s, what Steve and Art did. And so the way they rolled it out, it made it so that Rubenstein, even though he's not the majority owner financially immediately, he's the principal guy. He's taken over the team. And so the Angeloses were able to maintain the, it's, you know, all the stuff with the taxes and they were able to get what they wanted out of it. And everybody else was able to get what we wanted out of it, which was new ownership. And so it's pretty amazing that they walked, they found a path through all that stuff, because it's fairly complicated and it's unbelievable. I mean, I think it's unbelievable. It's so good for the fans. It's so good for the city. The Angelos tenure, and I was here. I've been here for all of it, and it's a lot of losing baseball, a little bit of winning, and I will give John Angelos credit. His last major act was hiring Mike Elias and these guys, and they've done an unbelievable thing. He stayed out of the way. I don't think Peter would have done it. He stayed out of the way, and really great things have happened, and they've set this franchise up nicely to succeed on the field, which is cool. So, but the ownership change, of course, changes everything and how they do business, how they interact with the city, how they interact with the fans, how they develop the area around Camden Yards. It's just a sea change. And I, for one, just love it. I love, put in the hands of a guy that, and we'll see how he is as an owner, right? I mean, but it's going to be, I mean, he's already interacting with people on Twitter, and it's just a whole nother world. And I, for one, it's like, when's the parade?
Well, I had Rick Vaughn on, and his first thing was, "Hey, I remember we wanted Angelos when we had Eli Jacobs,
He's
and you
totally
were
right.
right." And
Totally right.
he said it took him a month, and Lucchino had been thrown out already. I mean, it was bad faith. The legacy of the Angelos family to me will be bad faith. They lied. They were not honorable. They were not trustworthy. They were not honest. People. They were not people of integrity. And that became very apparent very early on. It's like the creep running for president. Like, if you haven't figured it out by now, I guess you won't figure it out. But a lot of good people left and went, and Larry went to San Diego. He's got a fistful of rings, Boston. Like, even DeWitt, who put the money up and got screwed, that almost nobody's reported that but me in the Peter Principles, because I found that out from Joe Foss 20 years later. But, DeWitt's gone out and gotten rings in St. Louis, and Castellini got his thing in Cincinnati. The people that really were involved in this thing 30 years ago. What do you expect? When will you know it's changed? And this is the question for me, like, I'll know it's changed if I'm sitting in the press box. Like, literally, it'd be very obvious for me. Like, let me do my job. I will say, hey, these are different kind of people than what we had here before. But how will anybody else know?
I think what you'll know almost right away, and it's like, to me, any owner across the spectrum of sports, it's not just this case, is the best owners know they know what they don't know, and so and that is that keeps them from impacting the on-field product, which they shouldn't. They're the owners. Occasionally, the owner does need to step in and make a move of some kind, fire the football coach in the NFL or whatever, or bring to bear what caused them to be the qualities that caused them to be that wealthy. Maybe there's something positive they can add to it. But generally speaking, and certainly in baseball, where there's so much research and development, and you need so much patience, and there's so much money that flies out the window, you're really better off if you know what you don't know, which is a lot. When it comes to how to put together a baseball team, I don't care who you are taking over as an owner. You don't know what it takes. And so we'll know right away if he says, I'm just going to let these guys do their thing like they've been doing. They're already doing great. And he sticks to by that. End of story. End of story.
John Eisenberg is here. He is still writing and doing things and authoring, even though he's not at Ravens.com anymore or the Baltimore Sun. You can find him. You can find him out on Twitter and on social media, opining and working on great writings of writing. The takeover of this, and I go back to the Modell Pichotti thing. Was very subtle, right? In the beginning, David not there. They brought in Dick Cass, who was Jerry Jones's guy, and it became very corporate. And then Billick got the wham pretty quickly. A couple 3 years in, Pichotti's like, I want a different guy. And he's got his guy, and it feels like John and Eric have jobs for life at this point. But it was a very subtle sort of, and nothing was broken. PSLs were all sold, tickets were all sold. Billick was the coach. Ray Lewis was in Ray mode. Suggs was in Suggs mode. Reed was here. It was like all of that. This is a little different, I think, from how the community has been treated. And John, I've said this out loud a couple times, and I'll admit it to you. I said to my wife about 2 days after the sale back in January, I'm like, I don't remember ever walking into that stadium and being treated well by anybody. Like, it's been so long. Now, Mike Flanagan treated me well in that period in 03, 04 when he ran the team. But even when he would invite us down as guests or whatever, we got treated like trash by everybody else because it was, you know, it was implied you had to mistreat me. This is before Free the Birds. I mean, I did Free the Birds because I was tired of being mistreated. It wasn't retaliatory. It was reactive. And, but for me, like I expect Cal's involvement in this and Kurt Schmoke's involvement. I don't know what that means, but it's going to look good on the dais at the press conference. But I'm wondering how they find a John Vitalin, who they brought in a couple, find a Mr. Big, a Dick Cass, to come in and get back with the community the way Larry did years and years ago, 40 years ago now, since they've had a figurehead. Like, literally speak to the community. And I'm speaking to you at a point where Bisciotti ducks the community, ducks everything about it. Sashi Brown hasn't had a legitimate press conference in the 2 years he's owned the team. They've thrown out a 30-year media member and nobody said a word. I see how these teams operate, and what the expectation level was 25 years ago was get out Gladham, what David Modell did, sell, get community involvement. Man, the Orioles, it's been lacking. It's been absent for so long. Anything that looks like some effort will change from a business perspective. I'm talking about selling tickets, selling boxes, getting people downtown, getting them excited about the team again. The Angelos family didn't do any of that, and I'm wondering how the business will feel different to the community. And part of it, just hang the new sign up and say it's new. That's great, yeah. And they're going to win, and that's great. But I think they have a chance to have massive change in the beginning because it's called for here. It shouldn't be subtle. It should be massive.
Well, I would be careful with where you set your expectations in the sports world of 2024, period, on terms of franchise interaction. And it's just a different world. And, you know, when I started hanging around the Orioles, it came to Baltimore and started going to spring training in 1985. And I think about it was almost a mom and pop, you know. I mean, they had that little office over there in Memorial Stadium, and Helen Conklin, you know, was the secretary, and you knew everybody, Bob Brown's people. And I felt like there was like seven people working for them. It was just a little tiny, and it was great. You know, it was truly a family business. And I think about some of the interviews I've had over time, things do change. Like I interviewed Cal Jr. about, for my oral history that I, of the team that I wrote 20 years ago, Cal Jr. about his dad. His dad was spring training. What they do is every year about January, February, he'd drive his station wagon down. And they, you know, put all the equipment in the back out of Memorial Stadium. And Rip Sr. would just drive down to Florida, you know, with the, you know, cigarette hanging out, you know, put a decal on the side of the station wagon. That was how they got ready for spring training, you know, just put the crap in the back seat and drove down there.
Who needed Von Paris at that point, right? Yeah, you didn't need a Mayflower. You just needed Cal Sr. station wagon, right?
That's it. That was it. And so Cal Jr. now has that institutional memory. But the world, you think about it, from that point in the 60s to the 80s when I walked in, it was still a mom and pop. But, you know, sports has become, and it's no secret to you, Nestor, far more corporate. There's so much more money on the table, 50 times more, 100 times more. And so that's just changed how they do business and how they interact. And certainly with the age of social media,
Dude, you worked for the Ravens, and I don't feel like you were treated well there. You know what I mean? Like you
were
like,
treated well there.
You were a team spokesperson, employee, kind of sort of journalist, columnist. And I don't know that like that everybody there loved you in the locker room or felt like, hey, I trust John, or we were still considered intruders.
Oh, well, definitely. Well, that's a whole nother deal. You know, my situation there, for the record, treated great at the Ravens by people. And, you know,
but not everybody saw you as I know this for a fact. I know what they said behind your back. So,
absolutely.
But you were still to them, a guy that is a journalist, not a guy who was there.
That was my goal.
PR director. Right.
That's my goal. That was my goal. And it kind of worked. And so for better or worse, I saw it as an experiment, and it worked out okay. That's what I wanted. But you're certainly right that there were plenty of people in the lunchroom that would come up to me and say, what'd you write that for?
What are you doing here?
What are you doing here? And I said, you know, sometimes I ask myself the same question. But anyway, I
Hopefully writing
survived it.
truth, because that's the only reason I would
Yeah.
read you, right?
Well, I'll tell you, and we're getting off subject here, but Dick Cass understood, totally understood where my position was coming from. And so, I felt like he had my back. He really did.
But that didn't
And
mean
so
every
that.
young 22-year-old player that came in and had an agent that
Oh.
and a coach had been telling them you're rat poison for years. Like, even when you worked on the inside, it did not guarantee like
That's true. No one
détente.
sees. They don't see those distinctions, honestly, and they just didn't see it. They just didn't see
Well,
the
when you're
distinction.
writing and Ray Rice is punching his wife in a glass elevator and they're trying to cover it up, which they did famously, like there comes a point where like the truth comes out, and then if you're not telling the truth, you don't look so good, you know? Like, I
Yeah.
guess that's the modern part of media. I'm doing an interview today, John. A young man from the Indianapolis Colts reached to me. It's by the way, it's coming up later this month, right? It's the anniversary, the big one, right? 4-0, right?
Right,
Right? So March 28th, it'd be 40 years.
4-0,
So the Colts
right.
website's doing a thing and they wanted to talk to me about it. And I saw the young man that said, Missouri Journalism School, all the places I couldn't get into, you could get into, but you're smarter than me. But like, and what are they're writing for team websites because that's where the jobs are. Because they're like, and so
Yeah.
that's not really journalism. I'm thinking, you went to school for 4 years to be a cop and you wind up working on the other side. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, that's where we are even with young people at this point. I don't know what to tell. And I tried to mentor. I have Luke here. I hired half my competitors. I don't know what to tell people in journalism, bro. You know, I really don't.
Tough. It's tough. It's tough because there is good sports journalism being done, and there's lots of it. But you're right. I mean, the people with the money are the teams, the leagues, and everyone else practically is working nonprofit, So it's tough. It's not easy, and it doesn't make me happy. I feel like I was very fortunate to live through the golden age of newspapers, the golden age of sports media. I mean, the New York Times got rid of the whole sports section, and so including some friends of mine. And it's unfortunate. It's really unfortunate because, but there's still stuff being done that's good. It's just harder and harder to find.
John Eisenberg is here. We meandered off the Orioles and onto the state of media, but I think that's all part of this is to your point, it was down home. It was Vince Bagley out there doing a shot at 5 o'clock and like all of that. I don't know how they reach people in a lacrosse community, in a community that, African Americans don't support baseball and have not really been reached to, despite whatever the RBI program and Adam Jones and maybe Frank Robinson before that would say, it hasn't worked. Whatever they've done hasn't worked. What will work here? I've asked this in a bigger picture because much like me, you've been all over the world, you've been to every stadium, every event, all these Super Bowls, all these things. I'm wondering what the it is, right? For gambling's a part of this now, and Atlanta's going to build hotels and have sports bar. Okay, that's great. What's the it for Baltimore? What's the gateway arch? What's going to, other than a good baseball team, and that's good enough, but what's going to make that area something that was worth $1.2 billion that we're giving two of these teams. Now the Ravens are going to build gold-plated toilets and have colder beer inside the perimeter and better tasting hot dogs inside. I watched the press conference from the outside, didn't get to ask any questions, but this is a lot of money, more than it costs for either one of the stadiums, and it's supposed to do something beyond enrich ownership.
I think in this particular situation with this franchise in this city, you cannot emphasize enough. The first thing that has to happen is winning, and winning for a little while, because the whole reflex here is, oh, the Orioles. It's been really since the late 90s. I mean, Buck Showalter, that was a lovely little interlude, which was smoke and mirrors, by the way, with no scouting, no players from the Dominican, no homegrown players. They somehow survived, put a decent product on the field, and that was fun. This is entirely different. I'm talking about a culture of winning that needs to be established here, and fans, it needs to be something that people here get used to, whether that means winning a World Series. It hasn't happened since the 80s. I mean, first things first, if you're going to create something that you're going to have the it that you're talking about, well, give me some it. Give me a World Series. Give me even just an appearance. Give me an American League pennant. Give me something that fans can say, wow, things are really happening, because it hadn't happened. And so you have to give the it is what we're doing here. This isn't the opera. It's baseball. You know, you're giving somebody a win or lose proposition. How about winning? Winning is that is the first. And I understand the business side is completely different. And what you have to do there, I think, and in that regard, is it's a little different, but it's just sort of a principle of how you go about your business. Don't, you know, respect your fans. Don't talk down to your fans, and, you know, treat them with respect. You know, don't get an interview where you say that, you know, your primary thing is the concerts. You know, don't do that. You know, your primary thing is winning, you know, putting a team on the field. That's what the fans want to see, not the concerts. So the concerts are great. It's fun. And we're adding something to whatever Oriole Land is. But winning, you have to start there. And really, it's everything that comes after that. First things first. Let's see what happens here when you got a really good baseball team for a few years, like what happened in Atlanta. You know, the Atlanta Braves were not always the standard, but they've had so many years of winning, and they've become an incredible commodity, and good for them, and some best practices that have really paid off. So, and that's on the field and off the field. So you need to replicate some of that here.
Well, they're going to do that, right? They're going to win, and I guess the one thing that the smart people I talk to is like, well, the first thing these really wealthy guys need to do after they write the check, they're really wealthy guys and they got Bloomberg and like all, they got $600 million coming from the state. They're going to figure out what they're going to do. It's almost a rebate. It's almost a one-third rebate off the $1.8 billion, right? Like, as you would see it from a business perspective, they're going to need to invest $200-$400 million into Rutschman and into Henderson and
totally.
Into a couple of these guys so that for the next 5 years, people can buy a jersey around here and
totally.
Have some Ripken sort of North Star. Even if the kids don't work out that well, they look at this point like it's different than Chris Davis money. It really is. It's different than Manny
it's
Machado
totally
money.
They're 22 years old. They're homegrown. I mean, it's completely different. And yes, different than Manny Machado money. And so, yes, you need to sign these guys. That's the first step. And also, by the way, sign the guy that put it together. You know, let's make sure that Elias and his crew stays here. They're pretty good at this, it appears. So let's see it through. Don't let him.
I was always worried about that. I know when you and I got together in November, promoted your book over at Pappas, I was like, man, it's been 5 years for him. Like, if his contract's up and there's not a sale here, he goes out the door, the next owner wouldn't inherit something that's so rich, right? Like, part
that's
of this is
sign.
The potentiality. Look, Peter could have dropped that at any point during this thing, right? And on a personal level, maybe the next owner would have let me back in 10 years ago to see bad baseball in a bad situation, in a burning city, in Trumplandia, in the middle of COVID. Like, all of these things that have happened, but this guy's taking the team over when – they're figuring out the media rights, and maybe that's not a bad thing. You know, trying to maybe they'll be first movers for the whole sport on how they deliver games to me at a reasonable price that I want and I feel engaged.
That's
and
another
it comes
one.
With this. They need to rethink the business of what they're doing, and they need to rethink about why people come to the ballpark, because they're really not there for the baseball game most of the time. At least what my eyes have seen the last 30 years, they're there for the thing, whatever that is, and they need to make that thing as good as that thing can be.
How about an app? An app that, you know, people actually can use and watch the games. And that's where it's all headed, is streaming and, you know, baseball, these sports, they're going to have to figure it out. But, yeah, make it so people can watch the games. So,
well, the money just fell off the side of a truck for all these SOBs with cable television. You know, I mean, like, the dirty thing about Angelos in all of this is that he hated the concept of Schmuck would always say he hates everything he doesn't control and abuses everything he does. That was Schmuck's line to me about Peter. But he hated the concept of the Washington baseball team ever existing.
Oh, totally.
And the fact that it actually happened is the only reason this thing really ballooned to become worth as much as it's worth to let him hang on, because he wasn't wealthy enough to hang in without it. If the Orioles would have tried to operate with that, and they never would have let the team in Washington, he never would have figured this out. It was all that free money that fell off the truck that allowed this to exist the last 15, 20 years.
And it's drying up. The world's changing. Technology's changing. And you got to figure it out. All industries have to constantly evolve. Listen, you're looking at a dinosaur, you know, the golden age of newspapers. Okay. You better evolve.
But even you had a digital column, for crying out loud. You're even
right
on the internet.
Okay. All right. I had to evolve. I definitely had to, and the writing itself changed. And so, yeah, you better. I mean, what I'm saying is the industry that I got into as a profession and was in and thought I would be in my whole life basically dried up. So, the revenue streams dried up, things changed. You better adjust. And so now it's baseball's turn. Okay. The RSN money's drying up. Listen, they've got a product. People want to watch it. They'll figure it out. They will figure it out. But the time is coming, and it's happening right here. It's happening in Baltimore. People want to watch your games, and if you give them an app that doesn't work, you're just making them mad. So that's what I'm talking about. Going back to respect your fans, respect them.
John Eisenberg is here. He's always offered me respect for decades of our. Sometimes we agree, sometimes we don't agree, but that's what makes it fun. Books, what do you got coming out, John?
Well, nothing new at this point. I got plenty going on with my two most recent books of football history. The Rocket Men, the book on black quarterbacks, came out in the fall. I will be appearing at the Annapolis Book Fair in April and the Gaithersburg Book Fair in May. Big book fairs in Maryland. Looking forward to that.
You know
And
why I like
those
book
are.
fairs? Smart people go there, they read.
I love book fairs, and so those are two good ones. I'll be presenting at both those. And the league, hey, listen, I'm right in the middle. I'm trying to see if I can get that thing converted to see it on the screen somewhere. So we'll see.
He's making
So
movies, John Eisenberg. Look out. Good
we'll
for you.
see. Yeah, long way from that, but we'll see.
All right. Well, listen, I'm gonna pick you up in Stoneleigh, and you and I are gonna head down York Road and properly find our way to Camden Yards at some point and watch a ball game together. And I might even buy you a hot dog in a press box one day. So I hope we can do that. By the way, they're naming the press box after Jim Henneman. Anything you want to say about Jim and his
Oh my
greatness?
gosh. Well, when I saw that, a smile went on my face. I mean, listen, I was there in the press box for however many years for really the wheelhouse of his career, when he was at the Evening Sun, and then he was there for so many years, night after night. This is the pre-scoring days. This is when he's a beat guy. And so I can't tell you, I was on the road countless times, had a great time. Nobody knows baseball better. And it's a cool honor. I was shocked by, I mean, but I just didn't,
It's
I'm
almost
not
like the
around.
place is under new ownership or something when they do things
Yeah,
like this,
it
right?
was like they did what? So anyway, that was wow. So an old scribe, anything, see these scribes getting honored because listen, listen, we're consigned to the dustbin for the most part. Sure, it's nice to see somebody honored for years of heart of
You're not
toil.
my dustbin. I read too many of your columns to feel that way. John Eisenberg's here. Go buy his books. Take good care of him. If you see a guy walk down the street, looks like John Eisenberg at Towson, he probably is. So say hello. And I always appreciate you. Thanks for coming on and providing some perspective. And I really do hope to get back down to the ballpark, even though I live in Towson now. I don't mind driving downtown. And we're gonna be doing Fadley's
No.
Fridays live from 2 until 5 every week that they're home. There's a home game. Luke's gonna come
Cool.
down and join me from 2 to 3. So we're wrapping ourselves in all the purple and the orange that we can here as we get into springtime. John, I appreciate you. Thanks for coming on.
All right, my pleasure. Thanks for having me, as always.
And next time I'll wear my Warren Moon jersey for you because I just like wearing it. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. New ownership. Old books being released by all of us, including my 2006 19 chapter book on my family's love of baseball, my father's love of baseball, my childhood love of baseball, and how all of this happened. So I hope you go read it. Back for more on Baltimore Positive right after this.